world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Happens inside a woman's brain the moment she becomes a mother. This week on Parents Are Hard to Raise, Diane reveals the amazing science behind the mother-child bond and what we can learn from it. Plus, a hot and spicy survival tip.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. I have a client who had a child late in life, and the child was born with Down syndrome. And my client devoted herself to Annie. And her husband died, and you know, she still had Annie and her son. And then her son got married and moved away. And he wanted Annie and Terry to move with him. You know, he was about 2 hours away. And Terry said no, because Annie was in a special school and she wanted Annie to remain where she was. Annie, when she got old enough, she went to work at a place where they trained people with disabilities to do certain jobs. And Terry worked while Annie was there. And Annie was thriving and becoming more social. And Terry always brought her everywhere with her. And Annie used to always come and visit. But Terry started not feeling well. And I finally got Terry to go to the doctor, and it wound up that, you know, she needed heart surgery. And Terry wouldn't hear of it. All she kept saying was, well, what about Annie? Because Annie was her life. This went on for quite a while, and Terry was getting weaker and weaker. Her son wanted Terry and Annie to come up and live with him, and that Terry could have surgery in a hospital near him, and he would, you know, have Annie with him, and he would get Annie enrolled in a program where he lived, and he would hire help, an aide in the home for Annie when she wasn't at the program. And Terry kept saying, no, no, you know, I want Annie to have the life that she has here and remain, you know, nothing to change for Annie. She was so afraid that Annie wouldn't adapt to the change. But it became apparent that Terry had to do this surgery. So we finally got Terry to make the change and have the surgery. And Annie went to live with her brother, and she was enrolled in a program there. And Annie did fine. You know, it took some adjustment, but Annie did fine. So what was it that made Terry, you know, protect Annie and kept, you know, put Annie's life before her own? Why did she, you know, take so long to come to that decision? Or my client, Elena, whose son has a stomach cancer and he lives in another state. He had surgery and he was supposed to have surgery and then, you know, have some recuperation period and then be able to go home. And what happened is the surgery had more complications than the doctors anticipated. So he's been in the hospital for 3 months now and having complication after complication. And Elena can't go see him every week. He's in another state and he's kind of far away, but she calls him every night. And he's so frustrated and he snaps at her. And she said, there's nothing I can say to make him feel better. I know he's hurting, you know, and I wish it was me. I wish we could change places. I just don't know what to do for him, what to say for him. And what makes Elena wish, you know, to change places for him and worry so much about him? Well, what I'm describing is it's that deep, powerful, intense, painful sacrificial but joyous bond between two human beings. It's that unconditional love that a mother has for her child. It's you know, that child being born. And there's controversy. Is it just because you have a child, you immediately have that unconditional love for them? Some say no, you have to make that choice. It's not just an innate thing. You make that choice to love that child. Others say no, it's an innate emotion. But whatever it is, most mothers have that unconditional love. That when we think of that love, we think of, you know, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, the Pope. We don't think of our mother, but our moms have that love for us. A mother's love has no equal. It's immeasurable. It can't be replaced. She loves us despite our flaws, our imperfections. She instills in us her strength and her courage. She guides us. She's always there for us. She always wants to make us happy. She always wants to protect us. She always wants us to stop us from hurting. And it doesn't matter how old we are. She loves us for who we are in spite of our mistakes, our imperfections. She loves us when we're unlovable. And it doesn't matter how old we are. So can we, as adult children, show our moms at this time that same unconditional love? When they frustrate us, when they don't do what we want them to do, when they won't budge, when they're unhuggable, when they're unlovable. And you know, that happens. Science says yes, we all have the capacity to show unconditional love. So how do we do it? Well, I had two different calls this week. I had a call from a son whose mom lives year-round in like a resort community. So in the summer, it's bustling, you know, and she has a lot of neighbors. And in the winter, it's quiet and there's not so many people around. There's not that many people who live there year-round. And every year, he says, you know, she complains in the winter, oh, I'm so lonely. He said, but then she, you know, just does her thing and she's okay. He said, but this year she kept saying, I'm so lonely, I'm so lonely. He said, so I thought I was doing right and I moved her up by us and she didn't want to move in with us. So she went into an assisted living. He said, and the place, of course, is beautiful, you know, inside and they have all kinds of activities. And, you know, he said, but what happened is she, you know, is in an apartment, but she doesn't cook for herself. He said, and so she doesn't do the things. She doesn't go shopping for herself. She used to walk to the stores, you know, where she lived because she was able to do that. And she always cooked for herself. He said, so now, he said, of course they have activities and, you know, people cook for her. She goes down for meals and she is socializing, sort of. He said, but we've noticed because she's been there that, you know, she's forgetting to take her medication. Her mind isn't that sharp. And she keeps saying she wants to come home. She wants to go home. He said, so I thought I was doing the right thing. He said, but I should have said to her, no, you know, this isn't the right thing. So now, you know, I said to him, well, it's okay. Because you know what? We, trying to show that unconditional love, we have to let mom, you know, if she's of sound mind, we have to say to her, I don't agree with your choice, but if that's what you want to do, and we have to do what we can. And even though we know it may not be the best choice, we have to let her go through it. And then she's going to say, okay, yeah, that isn't the best choice. I want to do something else. I want to go back home. And I know you want to bite your tongue and you want to say, I know, I told you, you shouldn't have done that. I knew this wasn't going to be the right choice for you, but we can't. We have to accept her as she is at this particular moment in time. She's imperfect, so are we. So we let her make that choice, and we tried it, and it isn't the right one. And I said to him, it's okay. It's not the right choice, and you knew that. But now you're going to make, and she's going to make the right choice because she knows she wants to come home, and she knows now she is a little forgetful. She does need help. So here we go. We did what we had to. We have to be honest and say, I don't think this decision is the right one for you, but if this is what you want to do. We have to try to be loving no matter what. And I know it's hard. Sometimes they're not lovable, you know. Do we at this age, you know, as adult children, I know I don't think about it, but, you know, coming on and doing this show and thinking about Mother's Day, you know, it's just a day, it's a weekend, but we have to, at this stage, you know, I'm thinking, you know what, I have to think about my mom and, you know, she's 87, 86. We have to try to think that every day should be Mother's Day. So we have to try to think every time we talk to her, every time we visit, what's the most loving thing that I can do for her at this moment? And, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll say to my husband, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And he'll say, no, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be doing this. And I say, no, because this is what she wants. And I have to think about her. I have to think about what she wants to do. It may not be what I want to do. I don't think it's the best thing to do, but this is what she wants. So this is what we're going to do. And, you know, what's loving for your mom may not be loving for your mother-in-law, or it may not be loving for another mom, but this is what she wants. I had a daughter call me as well, and she said to me, because she had been listening to what I've been saying, and she said, you know, my mom, she doesn't need a lot of help, but I come down on a weekend and she can't get in the shower, so I'm helping her shower. She said, but I'm having difficulty with it, and I don't even know if I'm doing the right thing. She said, you know, I've talked to her and my dad, and my dad doesn't want her to have the help, you know, but my mom kind of wants to have the help, but, you know, my mom and dad are Italian, so my father, you know, he's loud and he makes the decisions. And so, you know, I went and talked to mom and dad, and I come from an Italian family, and, you know, in that generation, you don't know with the wife. She may be quiet, and this mom was quiet. She rolled her eyes a lot when her husband talked, and her husband kept saying, but I don't want someone coming in here and helping her, because then they're going to do everything for her, and she's not going to do it on her own. I want her to do it on her own. And I said to him, well, that's exactly why you want someone coming in, because we're going to help her, and we're going to show her how to do it on her own. We're not going to do it for her. That's not the job of, you know, a home health aide coming in. The job of a home health aide coming in is to assist and to show her or the family the right way, and to ensure she's going to do it on her own. We want to make you more independent. We don't want you dependent on us. And the mom was kind of quiet, you know, and you don't know with the wife, is she silent because she's just diverting to what he wants, or is she silent because she's going to sock it to him and she's going to come out and she's going to say, no, after I leave, this is what I want. And I said to the daughter, don't worry about it. She said, well, my brother and I are talking, and you know what, maybe my father's like, well, all right, we're just going to start with 2 hours a week. And, you know, sometimes in home care, you have to start out with a lot. You do. But but there's different situations. In this situation, I say, yeah, okay, let's start out that way, because I'm confident in the service that's going to come out there. You hear me talk about MedEx, and MedEx, I'm confident in the home health aide that they're going to send out there, and they're going to know, because I'm going to tell them exactly what we want to do for this particular patient. And the daughter is relieved, because the daughter said, I don't want to be showering my mom. When I do visit, I just want to sit with her and talk to her. And I said, well, that's what you should be doing. So I'm confident that the aide is going to help her be more independent. And if, in fact, she wants to be, you know, go in the shower more than once a week, then that's what we can do. So I said to the daughter, don't worry about it. You know, I know this is what you want, but we have to look and see what your mom wants. Not so much your dad, unless your mom is, you know, unless she's she's reverting, you know, to let your dad make the decision. But I kind of don't think so, because I see she was rolling her eyes and she's looking at me like, no, we're going to do what I want to do. So I'm saying, don't worry about it. We have to just, part of that unconditional love is we got to accept mom and dad the way they are. And we're going to do what mom wants us to do, because that unconditional love doesn't mean, you know, when we were growing up, it doesn't mean that your mom let you do anything you wanted to do. She had that unconditional love for you. She wanted you to do the right thing, and she wanted you to help you make those right choices. But if you didn't, you know, and she felt you were going to be safe, she let you do it. She would tell you, no, I don't think this is the right thing, but sometimes she let you do what you wanted to do so that you knew, okay, yeah, I did make the wrong choice, but she let you do it. It doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean she agrees with everything you do. It doesn't mean that we're going to agree with everything, you know, that our parents want to do, that our mom wants to do. But we have to be empathetic. We have to be trusting of them. We have to respect their decisions. We have to support them in whatever they want to do, even though we know it may not be the right decision. About 10 years ago, I tried to move my mom and dad nearer to me. You know, you hear me talk, my brother and sister live in Texas and I'm here, but my mom and dad are about an hour and a half to 2 hours away. And, you know, 10 years ago, they were in their 70s and, you know, the home they live in is the home I grew up in. And it's a two-family home. It has huge property. They have steps. They have two flights of steps to go to the basement where the washer and dryer are. You know, and they lived upstairs. My grandparents lived downstairs. And, you know, my grandparents are no longer alive, but they keep the downstairs apartment available so that when my sister and brother come, that there's a place for them to stay. And I tried to, you know, my husband and I took them all over and retirement communities in the area that I was in. And they put a deposit on a home. They did. We finally got them to realize, yes. And at that time, you know, they were very active, more active. Of course, they were in their 70s, but I'm looking ahead. I'm, you know, knowing there's going to come a time where they cannot get in and out of a bathtub. You know, they can't go up and down these steps. They can't take care of this huge property. And I wanted them to be near me so that I can visit, you know, I can see them more. And I can help them in ways, you know, where they're an hour and a half away and I can see how they're doing. So they put a deposit on this, home in a retirement community. And my father was like, kept saying to the guy, can I get that deposit back if I change my mind? And I knew he wasn't going to go through with it. I just knew because I know him. My mother wanted to do it. And sure enough, you know, they kept going back and forth, and my father decided, you know, they decided they didn't want to do it. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's not the right decision, but I can't force them to do it. They can make their own decisions. And now, you know, they're in their late 80s, and they say to me, oh, we should have listened to you. We should have listened to you. You know, we can't really do what we used to do. Oh my gosh, this house is too much for us to handle, etc. And I want to say, oh, I know, I told you, you should have listened to me, but I can't, because I can't make them feel any worse than they do. I say to them now, well, you're not too old to move. Oh, we're too old to move. We can't move. You know, so now I just say, I'm empathetic, and I say, all right, well, we have to figure out something else. You know, you're not too old to move. So now I have to try to get them to understand they aren't too old to move. I say to them, you know, I can help you move. We can help you move. You're not too old to move. Oh, I don't know if we can do it. So now this is the point you have to constantly adjust and readjust. This is the point I'm at now, so now I have to figure out something else. I have to adjust my thinking and try to adjust their thinking. So now that's what I'm working on with them. You're not too old to move because, you know, I want you to be closer to me. And they realize that. But this to, you know, an 87 and 88-year-old, this is a big undertaking. So we have to love mom when we don't agree with her, when she's in a bad mood, when she's sick, when she's depressed. We have to love them. We have to try to show them, no matter what, this unconditional love. And, you know, when you're together this weekend, when you see them, when you talk to them, I know when I was growing up, I was always afraid to have kids, you know, in high school or grammar school over my house for dinner, because I came from this Italian family where, you know, everyone says, oh my God, Italians, all they do is yell, you know, they yell at each other. And we're not yelling, we just talk loud, and we talk over each other, and everybody talks at the same time, and everybody's animated, you know, so I was like, I can't have anybody else over. They'll be in shock, you know. They'll be like, oh my gosh. So when you're together this weekend or whenever, you know, when you look at those advertisements on TV and everybody's sitting at the table and the table's set so well and everything looks perfect, and even the turkey looks perfect, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, that's not my family. My family's messy, chaotic, but they're funny and they're real. And, you know, you just have to stop and you got to think, okay, you know, we have these feelings of frustration, of anger, we lose our patience, you know, but there's also those moments of affection and happy feelings. And, you know, those feelings of frustration and anger, loss of patience, they're not indicative of a bad mother or a bad son or a daughter. They're just indicators that we're human and we just have to realize that. We have to realize that, and we have to try to get that unconditional love, try to get that understanding of it, and try to think of it when you look at your mom, now, because we forget about that. We do. We forget that we had that feeling towards our parents when we were young, and that your mom still has that feeling for you. When, you know, when you think about the mother-child relationship, it's so contradictory because it requires this intense love on our mother's side. And yet, because of that love, she has to help us grow away from her. And she has to help us be independent. And that's a sign of a great mom. So, you know, it's a struggle. And we want to think about that unconditional love now as adult children, because there's few bonds stronger than a love a mother has for her child, because that love will always be there. Your mom is always going to care about you, no matter what age you are, and no one is ever going to care about you as much as your mom. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk to you about the history of Mother's Day.
She's always been there for you. She taught you how to ride a bike, tie your shoes, make your bed, blow your nose. She nursed you through the chicken pox and that nasty stomach flu. She was there on your first day of kindergarten, just out of sight, peeking through the window, her heart breaking just a little. You were growing up so fast. She knew just what to do to make it all better when you skinned your knee, came home with bubble gum in your hair, and got your heart broken for the very first time. Now, she needs you, and you have no idea how to help. You're not alone. Since 1982, we've been helping people just like you find answers to the problems you're facing right at this moment. Life is so much more complex than it was when we were kids. The stresses you and I face today are greater than they ever were for our parents when they were our age. We're pulled in so many directions at once, There never seems to be enough hours in the day. And no matter how much you do or where you turn, it still feels like you're letting someone down. These are the kinds of problems that can tear families apart. The good news is, you're in the right place. There are solutions, and we'll help you find them. We are the men and women of MedX Home Care, and for over 35 years, we've been helping families just like yours grow older together.
Did you know that the official Mother's Day holiday came about in the 1900s? When Anna Jarvis came up with the idea when her mother died, she wanted to honor her mom and the sacrifices that mothers made for their children. So she got backing, financial backing, from a Philadelphia department store owner, John Wanamaker. And in May 1908, she organized the first official Mother's Day celebration at St. Andrew's Methodist Church in Grafton, West Virginia. And on that same day, thousands attended a Mother's Day celebration at one of Wanamaker's retail stores in Philadelphia. So after the success of her first Mother's Day, Jarvis wanted her holiday to be added to the calendar. She argued that American holidays were biased toward male achievements. So she started this massive letter-writing campaign to politicians and newspapers, wanting, you know, urging them that Mother's Day should be a national holiday. Congress rejected making Mother's Day a national holiday, official holiday, saying if they did that, then they have to make a national holiday for mothers-in-law as well. So President Woodrow Wilson signed a measure establishing the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. So Anna Jarvis, she originally wanted Mother's Day to be a personal celebration between mothers and families because, you know, mothers were the people who did more for you than anyone in the world. So she wanted, you know, moms to wear a white corsage and have her children visit, or she could attend church. But once Mother's Day became so popular, all these merchants, florists, card companies, candy companies, they all started capitalizing on its popularity. So Anna Jarvis, who she never became a mom, she never married, she initially worked with all these same merchants to raise awareness for Mother's Day. She was really became disgusted at the commercialism of the day. So then she started outwardly urging people not to buy cards and flowers and candy. She even went as far as suing groups using the name Mother's Day. And she was trying to lobby now to have the government remove Mother's Day from the calendar. So she spent most of her wealth on legal fees. And by the time she died, she had disowned Mother's Day altogether. And did you know that Mother's Day is celebrated in more than 46 countries throughout the world? The holiday has different meanings and is associated with different events and is celebrated on different days. Did you also know in the days of Tin Pan Alley, nothing sold like a mother's song? There were thousands of them published between 1900 and 1940. And finally, did you know more phone calls are made on Mother's Day than any other day of the year? And your survival tip of the week. Start your day with a shot of ginger and turmeric. Ginger is great for digestion, and turmeric has major anti-inflammatory properties. Starting the day with a shot of them will prepare your body to combat the stress of the day. So you can just grate a tablespoon of fresh ginger and turmeric root into a glass of warm water. Or you can have a ginger turmeric smoothie. And you can use a banana, a pineapple, you can use coconut milk or mango, a teaspoon of vanilla, and a piece of fresh turmeric, and a piece of fresh ginger. So I want to say, for all you moms, have a happy, happy Mother's Day. If this week's show was helpful to you or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in future shows. You can reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. Diane with one N, Berardi, B-E-R-A-R-D-I. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.